Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is powered by DenAnywhere.com, the online extension of Den Meditation. Our primary goal is to make meditation and personal growth available to all so that you truly understand and learn to love yourself, thus creating more harmony and success not only in your life, but within the world. We offer online programs, teacher trainings, retreats, free meditations, and many programs to further your growth. So go explore all the possibilities. Go to DenAnywhere.com now. This is super exciting. We heard you guys. Everyone always asks us, especially from the podcast, so how can I do the Den even though I'm not there? I don't live close enough. I don't have the time. So now we have denanywhere.com. And you guys, it is basically like having the Den whenever you need it, wherever you want. And we have free meditations, so there's no excuses, all different times so that you can put it into your practice, and they are free. And we have certifications, workshops, challenges that I'll announce that we can all do together. Basically, it's anything you could want from us but can't walk through the doors. And the beauty is you can sign up for free, and please do, as we're constantly putting new product up there and adding things that you're going to love, and I don't want you to miss anything. So go to denanywhere.com, sign up, and enjoy. Hey guys, welcome to Den Talks Podcast. This is Tal. I am your host and the founder of Den Meditation. And I have a fun interview today, a little bit different. I'm actually interviewing a YouTuber. Her name is Lisa Schwartz. Her YouTube channel is LiseBug, and she has 2.2 million followers. But the reason I was attracted to interview her is she wrote this book, 30 Life Crisis, which, yes, is about kind of being in your 30s and feeling like you're going against what's expected of you and the norms and how hard that can be. But look, we've all talked about this. But the reason I feel like it's great for you guys and our audience is the fact that she really does talk about kind of her mental health and realizing that she was grappling with social anxiety and OCD from a very young age. But it wasn't until her 30s that she actually kind of acknowledged it and owned it and found tools to live with it. And I just feel like I've talked to so many of you guys, and I know that this is something so many of you go through. And so whether it be in smaller forms or actually a diagnosis, this interview, I hope, will make you feel less alone and also gives you some tools on how to grow with it and deal with it so that you can actually start owning yourself and live your life in a way that actually feels fulfilling and not weighed down by this. All right, well, here we go, and I hope you enjoy it.
It doesn't feel real. Like, all of my fears and stuff are kind of like,
they go away. It's like you're leaving them when you travel.
It's a little bit of an imaginary life that you're living.
So it's like you travel, you feel like you're going on a vacation from your like shit.
Yeah, I think so.
Wait, but I find that, are we on? Wait, can we just roll into this? Because I find that so interesting. I'm with Lisa Schwartz, and I'll do a proper introduction later. Don't worry.
Oh, no need.
But I want to just roll into that because I think that's so interesting that you do have some heavy anxiety and OCD and stuff that you've been grappling with since you were a kid, but like you can go on vacation and it kind of disappears a little bit.
Yeah, it's something about stepping out of your norm and routine. I mean, listen, I'm not like completely carefree, but I do think that there's things that don't trigger me as much as they do in my normal life when I'm, you know, even just driving in a car or getting in a taxi in another town, here I'm always like so neurotic and like holding on, and there's a freeing element.
Is it because you don't know what to expect? Like, what is it do you think changes? So for instance, like being stuck in traffic somewhere else versus stuck in traffic here, does that have a different effect for you?
Yeah.
Why do you think?
I don't know. I think I'm just coming at it with such a different sense of adventure, whereas like this is just day-to-day life. I don't know. It's something
magical.
But you
magical, know what I love about this? I feel like we kind of might have helped you out by just talking about this. Because think about it. If you can come to your life with kind of this point of view of like freshness.
Right.
Do you feel like that would help?
Because I mean, that's interesting.
Because well, no, it's interesting.
This is it. We're done.
We're done. Bye. Thanks for coming. Thanks for showing up. And that was so not the intent of any of this. But the reason it's popping in my head is because, you know, we were talking about patterns before we were on here. But it's like they don't envelop you completely, clearly. Like there's moments where you actually can escape them even if you're in a similar situation. And you're just telling me a lot of it's because you come at it like with a different point of view.
Yeah, and I think I was taught really young to embrace travel. Both of my parents just love to travel, my grandparents. And so there's a sense of freedom and exploration when you're doing that that is so opposite of what I'm normally doing. I don't know.
Wait, but let's go on that, because one of my questions actually was, and just so people know, she wrote this amazing book, 30 Life Crisis. And the reason we've kind of started talking about this is because so much of it is about you kind of growing and owning yourself mm-hmm. and like really owning the parts of you that might be like high in anxiety or OCD, and then finally kind of embracing it to the point that then you can start healing and growing from it, which I love. And it's so relatable to so many people. So one of the questions I had, which goes right into what you were talking about, was how much of this anxiety or OCD and stuff that can cripple you at times do you feel like was innate and you were born with it versus how much of it do you think was learned?
Oh, that's interesting.
And the reason I ask is because you just said, well, I was taught to love to travel. Like I was taught that it's magical and we should just be free. What were you taught, even if it wasn't on purpose, like for your day-to-day?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, right? Because I see the anxiety in my father and then, you know, his father. So it's definitely in our genes.
Right.
Certainly. But then I saw it. So
then you repeated it. Then it was learned.
Then it was learned. So I don't know. It's the chicken or the egg kind of thing.
That's interesting. What kind of anxiety does your dad show? Like what is it that
he has? Very similar.
Really?
Yeah, very similar. My brother has extreme OCD, but in a kind of different way. He was like the very stereotypical, like he would erase all of his homework and have to start again if it wasn't like perfect. So I never thought I'd had it because he had such an extreme version of it. But my dad's more like a social anxiety discomfort and just being out of his box. So I don't know.
And what about your mom? Like, what was your mom like when you were growing up?
My mom, I think, was so concerned about my father and sort of keeping him happy and comfortable that I don't think I picked up that much about my mom until later years when they split and my mom and I became so close. I don't see anxiety in my mom.
Not at all.
No, but she's done so much personal growth, and that's not to say that she's like perfect.
No one's perfect.
Yeah, but I don't see my similar like quote unquote issues in her.
Right.
I just like feel like I'm learning from her.
How did like it manifest like as you were a kid? You talk about it a little bit. Like you talk about like what for you came first? Because you talk about you realize you had a fear of change and you do this funny dog story of how you begged. And then almost when it happened, you couldn't handle the idea of it happening.
Yeah.
I love it. My daughter's like super dramatic. So I'm like, oh God, this is hilarious. And you talk about that, and then later you kind of talk about this anxiety and use McDonald's as kind of a reference of like not even being able to go up and ask for more ketchup. Something as simple as that. You're not even sending food back. You're not even being like the rude person, which I could get. You're like, I don't want to be that person.
Totally.
Simply just being like, can I have more ketchup for my French fries? And that was crippling for you.
Yeah.
If you look back, did one feed the other? Like, did one come first? Was it like a change thing, or was this just overall anxiety?
Hard to say. I don't know, because I feel like just now I'm starting to discover all these things. Like I would have never connected not being able to ask for ketchup until I started writing this. It's like, oh, I had a lot of like aha moments where I was like, oh, that it was festering in me from a very young age. But I don't know if I was aware of it back then.
What surprised you most when you were writing this?
I just think how everything's so connected. But I've also been learning that in therapy, just picking apart how those little moments in your childhood really do come through, and they come out at the weirdest times. And I'm not a parent, but I've been talking to some of my friends that are parents, and they say it's so surprising when they are raising their children that these things that they had in their childhood that they haven't even thought about are coming up, and they're having to process it now. And I guess I see that in a relationship.
Absolutely.
You know, any friendship, relationship.
Anything that challenges you
to
be who you are, it's going to come up. And parenting is one, and for sure being in a relationship is a huge one. Even like a deep friendship.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah. So was there anything, though, you were like, oh my God, I didn't even remember that when you were writing that came up for you?
I think there's a lot of like references to childhood that they're not on the forefront of your brain. And even sometimes in therapy, like she'll ask me about my childhood and I can't quite like wrap my head around it and remember certain details. But with this book, like trying to find specific examples from my childhood that then sort of support a claim that I am, a statement that I'm making, things will come back. So it almost like triggered those memories. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Did it help you therapeutically?
Like, oh, absolutely.
Because I know you're very honest that you've been in therapy for a while and you're working really hard. I love the time where you're like, I decided this year I was going to work hard.
Yeah,
on it.
Finally.
Finally, I'm going to commit. And so it's great. Like you're working really hard. Did this fill in some gaps that you'd been actually struggling with in therapy?
Yeah, or solidified, rather. Like, I actually think I got to a good place in therapy where I was like, I took a step back and hadn't been going for a while because I felt like, okay, I sorted through the big things I need to sort through. I want to step back and just kind of live my life.
Process,
because sometimes it becomes counterintuitive, at least for me.
It does.
At some point. You're over, and then you're
overanalyzing.
Yeah, it's too much. So then I kind of wrote the book, actually,
In that period.
So I think it was just getting it all down on paper and looking at it and being like, oh, yeah, I have made this growth and these connections.
But I love that because I do think, we talk about that a lot here, too. Obviously, I think therapy is great and important, but there is something that then becomes this overanalyzation. And like we say it here, too, it's like, if you look at everything as energy, when you talk about something, you're putting more energy behind it. And so it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's still living and creating. By the way, not to say you shouldn't talk. We should absolutely talk about stuff. But then there's that period of when do you push it? Like, when do we, like, transmute that energy and move
it? Right, let it go.
And let it go. Yeah. And I do think you have to process it. Like you say it, so much stuff comes up. If you're not processing, then you're just almost amplifying it.
Sure.
Versus like letting it do its job.
Yeah. But once the story's done and you've told that story, it's time to move on.
Right.
You know a lot of people that are stuck in their story.
Ooh.
And that's tough to watch.
It's really hard to watch because like you see it so clearly and you can't say anything because for some people, it's just real comfortable.
Absolutely. It's so much. And I think I talked about that in the book. It's so much easier to like, at least in my 20s, it was so much easier to be like kind of lazy about my mental health because it's more
accepted.
Yeah,
in
it's
your
more
20s.
That is true. It's more accepted, and it's just easier to be lazy.
It is easier to be lazy
or ignorant or whatever.
But then, like you said, then you get to a point you're like, but now it doesn't look as good that I'm like lazy or not doing this or not doing that.
Yeah.
What was it? What do you feel like was a trigger for you of like, this has got to change? Because a lot in your 20s, it sounds like, and I want to ask because this book is mostly about your 30s.
Yeah.
What were your 20s like?
I think I blacked out a lot of my 20s.
Really?
I was partying a lot in my 20s.
Fair enough.
Yeah, just drinking, nothing like crazy. But I think my 20s were just discovery. Like they say I went to college. I did a 4-year right after high school.
And you live there?
And I live there.
So you did the typical.
Yeah, you're very like typical. I went to UC Irvine, like did the whole thing. And I think the idea is like that's the time that you're growing, but really that for me was just the time to like have fun and sort of start to figure it out. But the time right after, when I like got my first apartment out here and had to figure out bills and all that, I think that was an interesting time where you really are just trying to figure out who you are and how you're going to function in this world.
It's hard.
Yeah. And so I think that leads to a lot of like, I did a lot of weird part-time jobs and I didn't really take anything too seriously.
Now you grew up kind of always wanting to act or perform and like be in front of the camera, right? Or was it mostly on stage, but in general? So how, and that kind of pushed you to come back to LA, right? To be here. Or where were you in school?
Irvine, Orange County.
Sorry.
It was either like come here or go to New York.
Right.
My family was here and just like made sense to come back.
So in your 20s, like you're figuring it out. When do you feel like there was a shift for you of like, I need to pay attention to my mental health. Like something's off here. And by off, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I was aware of it because I have memories of going to therapy once I moved back here. But I never like quite found the therapist. It was a combination of not finding someone that worked for me and with me.
Yeah.
And it's nothing personal against those things. It's just like finding the right fit.
Yeah.
It's like dating. But also I, like I said, wasn't really quite ready to really dive into stuff. I don't know if I wasn't quite ready or I just wasn't mature. I'm not really sure. So I think it wasn't until I went through a really big breakup, that's when I was like, I need help sorting through this. This is a lot to, I need help. So
when for you, because you talk, one of the things you said that I love about, I think the first therapist you really worked well with, like, mm-hmm. and actually dug into, you talk about, it was finally, you got to the point, I think of three sessions in maybe, that you're finally like, I can just lift this veil off and actually tell them what's really going on.
Yeah.
But when in your life were you actually aware what was going on? Like, how much of this did you feel, like, as a child, yeah. how much of this anxiety or OCD was kind of prevented you from doing things? How much of it did made you feel different? Like, what were you feeling then? And when did you start being able to put words towards, like, this is clearly something?
Yeah, I think I remember my mom said I started getting stomach aches in fourth grade. And that was, like, when I had Miss Swope, who was so mean. And it was just, like, that was kind of a transition where, like, I started to discover boys and the pressure of that. And I had this, like, cool friend that came in, but she was kind of the wild child. And so I started getting stomach aches then. And so I think it actually manifested physically for me. I always had stomach issues, digestion issues, things like that.
And I think digestion is completely tied to always.
Absolutely.
Because even my husband's, like, oh my God, you don't understand. But he always calls it the Jewish stomach. And I'm
yeah,
like,
me too.
I'm like, but I'm Jewish too. I don't have that stomach. I'm yeah. like, I go, nobody in my family has that stomach. But he's like, well, you guys are Israeli. It's different. It's always this thing. And he was like, well, my mom has it. It's like hereditary. I'm like, but your mom's also like a nervous Nelly too. I go, it's all tied together.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yes. That's where it manifested for so long.
Because we carry, people don't realize like how many like nerve centers you actually have in your gut. So your gut has its own intelligence. So like it is completely wrapped up with like what you're actually going through emotionally.
That's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
when
it's got its own like soul down there, you know?
Yeah. Mine is very active. It's an active soul.
So
it manifests as that. Yeah. And then after college, so then in college, like, I don't think I was like fully present. You guys are drinking and you know, the whole thing. And they put me on antidepressants, I think.
Why?
In college.
Because
that's
your parents or
no, their psychologist there.
So why were you going to the psychologist there?
I like can see it. It's so weird how memories.
I
like,
love it. You really did block.
Yeah, I could see it there. Yeah, no, I don't remember. I think just typical like stress, but I don't think I had completely connected the dots. But I think they gave like everyone in school that went
mm-hmm.
antidepressants. I think
Probably.
They were quick to do that, and I was on birth control, so all this.
There's a lot of shit in your
body.
Oh
my God! So after I graduated, I got off of all of it, and I was trying to rebalance, and that's when panic attacks started, and that's when I really realized what was happening.
What was your first panic attack?
Ooh, I don't know if I even remember, but I don't think I was able to identify it. Because if you don't know what a panic attack is, it's so scary.
Because you think you're dying, right?
Yeah, it's just like it takes your whole body over, and then the anxiety of what is this? It's just like this nasty spiral.
Now, were you with anyone when your first panic? Like, did anyone know it was happening, or were you like totally on your own for this?
I don't remember. I have memories of like being on the floor, like curled up at my dad's house. So he was there, but I had to go to work. And I remember him being like, just get up and go. Like, I don't know if we all as a family, like really understood what was happening to me until I finally.
Did he ever have panic attacks? Because I know you said he's high anxiety.
You know what? I don't know. I've never asked him that.
I'd be curious.
Yeah. I can't, I'm sure that.
Or maybe not if he couldn't recognize it. Because it sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I think he's been on medication for a while. So that kind of changes how you react to things.
And so when you said your mom kind of spent most of, because they're divorced now,
yeah.
spent most of the marriage kind of just trying to take care of him?
I think so. I mean, that's my memory of it.
And do you feel like that's why they split? Or do you know why they?
I think it was like many years to come in. And so as soon as I moved out of the house, it's one of those things.
They're like, we've done our job.
Yeah, it's just the two of us now, and this is like not what.
But it sounds like you weren't really aware of it.
Yeah.
Like you didn't sense that there was any discord between them.
I mean, I remember fighting a lot, but I think most kids experience that.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
Like a lot, or just like they fought.
I mean, they just fought. Argued. Yeah. They argued. And there was points, and I write about it in the book, where my mom at one point was like, I can't do this anymore. And she said that to
yes.
me, which was interesting. And
but you didn't know what she was talking about at that time.
I mean,
you?
I knew she was referring to my dad.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But you still don't really process like. I hadn't.
You were
been,
young, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, and I wasn't like in a relationship. Like I didn't know what relationships really were. So yeah, I think I always had an idea that there was stuff going on between them, but I didn't really like. I guess your mind never really jumps to that's what this is going to be, a divorce.
So when you said, like, this is the first time I could actually take this veil off and let someone see me, which was this therapist, did your parents never see this stuff in you? Like, did they, or did you have a way of keeping what was really going on inside of you from people?
I'm sure that they did. I mean, again, I'm a lot closer with my mom.
Yeah.
And she, I think just simply because she's a female, but also she's just a lot more self-aware and open and, you know, willing to have those conversations with me. So I'm sure that she saw it. But then again, I was away from them for so long.
Right.
Because right after high school, I went to college and I never really came home to visit. So they weren't really seeing what was going on.
But it's interesting because you say you have a lot of social anxiety, but you were going out and you were partying.
Yeah, I mean,
were you masking it with like the drinking stuff? So you weren't feeling, you could mask it to the point where you could actually go out.
Yeah, and also I don't think the feeling of, so I started getting feelings like when I would go in the malls or airports where it would become such a physical reaction to big crowds and, it, you know, things would start to swirl and this and that. But that didn't really come on till later in my 20s. So during college, maybe I didn't, maybe it would have come on, but I was just too stoned to know or something. I don't know.
And does the therapist say, like, is this something that happens? Like, this might be a really dumb question, but I just don't have as much experience with like OCD or anxiety or social anxiety. So like, is this something that you have and then it exacerbates and then the social anxiety kind of is another part of it? But if you, let's say, could have gotten into therapy earlier, started getting tools, would it not have gotten to that point? Or that was just naturally, is that naturally something that's always part of it?
I don't really know. I know that the OCD, mine is like I overthink things.
Right.
If that's how it festers in my brain. And I pre-worry about things. And so that feeds into the social anxiety, which feeds into the OCD. So I know that those two sort of ball together. Had I worked on it earlier,
maybe.
But I don't know if I would have had the maturity to quite understand. I just think this was my timeline.
And like,
you know, this is how it was all meant to be. And, you know, I feel like I'm a better person because I went through all that.
Absolutely.
But maybe, yes, maybe.
And when did you feel like there were times, like when you were growing up, you would like overthink things? And since people didn't know that you were, this is what you had, like would you get these comments that would just drive you crazy? Like, stop worrying or stop overthinking. And like, could you just not? Do you know what I mean? Like, did you butt up against what other people, like when you said your dad was like, just get up and go to work, were there times where you're like, that just could have been handled differently, but people just didn't know?
Probably, yeah.
Like, what's your advice? I guess, what's your advice to people who are either going through this or friends that might have friends that are going through this?
Well, I guess those are two different things, right? So, like, how to deal with someone who has anxiety. I've found some really great memes, and they're memes, but, like, things that people pass along that are, like, you know, instead of saying, like, just get through it, it's, like, what can I do to support you? Or, you know, just cheer up. The same thing for depression, right? Just cheer up. Yeah, or just smile. Yeah, it's more about, like, facilitating, asking questions, what can I do to help you? Do you need space? Or do you want a companion right now? Like, it's things like that simple, giving, I think, the person that's struggling the power and some control. Because, right, there's a big thing of, like, lacking control when you have anxiety. It's you can't control anything, and that's why your body... You know.
So giving them the choice of control is really helpful.
I just came up with that right now, but I think that that's probably giving them something to grasp onto, asking. And then for people that are suffering, I really think asking for help, which is so hard to do. That took me a long time to figure out, but whether it's like a family or a friend or a therapist or a teacher, like really reaching out, and there's no shame in that. And in fact, people are so glad that you ask and so honored that you would
absolutely
trust them.
And I'm sure anyone who's close to you and sees you struggling, all anyone wants to do is help someone they love or care about.
Of course.
And help them get to the other side, whatever that is for someone.
And luckily there's so many tools now.
Yeah.
I think podcasts have like really opened the conversation tremendously to things that like, especially as women, we've just been like taught to kind of, at least I feel like, to shove down, to quiet. And now... we're so able to open, you know, talk openly about these things. And that's incredible.
Huge. You know, one of the things you said in your book, too, is you finally did get tools of self-talk. And if you couldn't figure out the self-talk, if that wasn't working for you, then you had a meditation you went to. Mm-hmm. What was the self-talk? Like, what were those tools?
I came up with a mantra, which I'll just keep to myself, but like this, that I would repeat in my head. And I don't know if that like, I don't know if I even like hit it, like a sense of hypnotism, you know, kind of like.
Yeah, it's like meditation.
Yeah, exactly.
And was it just like a self-empowering mantra? Was it?
I am this, and this is okay.
And that was your own that you came up with?
And that was my own. And I don't know, I don't even know if that was a conscious effort that I made. It was just like one time at the doctor when I was freaking out, because I don't like medical things.
Right.
It just like, I would just say it on repeat in my head to help me get through. And then later in life, it's like, okay, this isn't my stuff. I have a tendency to take on other people's energies.
Yeah.
Very porous, to remind myself
very
when
porous,
I go out.
I love that.
Yeah. When I go out, like, okay, this feeling I'm feeling is not mine. This is someone else's. Like,
it's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you kind of mentioned, you talk about how you're really, like, you have your sixth sense is, like, on fire.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything to that? Like, do you feel like as a kid maybe it was, like, really on fire? Because we hear, I mean, look, in the world we operate in here, too. A lot of times it's a lot of people who, and look, the first thing is everybody has a sixth sense. Everybody's intuitive. Everybody can be as psychic as they want. It's a matter of how much are you going to let it open up. But some kids are born very open. Well, all babies are born open, but some kids stay open in a way that can be very overwhelming, and then they mask it in different ways. And so, like, one of the things that came up for me when you were talking about that is, like, when you're like, my sixth sense is really strong, it's hard to know what people are thinking sometimes. I wonder if there's anything to do with that, too, for you. If, like, that was actually super strong for you as a child before you know what the fuck that means.
Right.
And if, like, some of that, it can be very anxiety inducing.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know what
I mean?
That's
so interesting. Yeah, I've heard that about kids, and I think that's so cool and so fascinating. And I just love reading stories about that.
And a lot of kids, you end up, all kids shut it down at some point. It's like you're born, and then you shut it down. And some, it's just so big, they can't shut it down. And then it can. And usually when you talk to children or now adults or that, it's like it's very anxiety inducing. Because think about when you're like open up to this huge world without the tools or the capability of knowing what it means. It's a lot.
And trying to pick apart what's real and what's not.
Oh, God, it's a lot.
Yeah, trip out, man.
Yeah, and then think about it. And then if you have already in your DNA, like, the tendency for, like, anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
Could be.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I got to ask my mom about that.
You should. Because your mom seems like she's super open
to
all this stuff.
And my mom has great sixth sense. And I think my mom can hear people and spirits, and she's a little fairy. So
is she listening now? Hi, mom.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Probably.
But that's awesome. I love that your mom's like that. It's so interesting that your mom was with your dad.
Very. It's fascinating.
It's almost like she was there to like heal a little
bit. I think so. And I think he taught her a lot. She came from a single mother family who worked very hard and kind of raised herself and in a poorer area. And so I think, you know, my dad gave her a lot and taught her a lot, and she taught him a lot. And then it was just time to.
Are they still close?
Ways. Yes, they are the best.
That's so nice.
They're the best co-parents. They're so good friends. We do Thanksgiving together. They made such an effort to like continue to have a relationship for our benefit.
Are they remarried? I know you talked about this really kind of sad story about your mom who dated on, but are they now? Are they with anybody?
Yeah,
or?
My mom's with a great guy, Larry, if you're listening.
Larry.
We love Larry. They've been together for like 2 years, and my dad's been with the same woman for, hi Toby, 16-ish years.
Wow.
Yeah, neither, I don't think, plan to remarry. I just don't think.
And so all the four of them all do Thanksgiving together. It's like both extended.
Larry's new, so he hasn't quite integrated.
He hasn't made the Thanksgiving dinner yet. Uh-oh, so what's happening this fall?
Well, stay tuned. Because he has a family as well. But yeah, we have integrated everyone, and that's cool.
I mean, that's what today is all about. It's like so interesting. You know, you touch on the theme a lot in your book of, you know, like the standard and what people are doing. So whether it be about dating, getting married, having babies, you know, jobs. And I feel like that was very anxiety inducing for you too, feeling like you weren't following.
Yeah, the standard that, like, I don't even know where that came from.
Right, but I'm always like, where did it come from? Think about it, because families now, and they're like, it's just not standard. We all do Thanksgivings together. I'm like, but I feel like that's happening more than you see a nuclear family that's just stay together, that's always having Thanksgiving dinner together. I think it's more often, like, what's our version of Thanksgiving, which I feel like it should be life. What is your version of life? Like, what works for you?
Yeah. But you think that's been around for a long time. I actually think, like, we're just starting to
embrace
that.
No, I'm saying you see it now more.
Yeah. I mean, Modern Family, right? Yeah. Patricia, like, we finally are starting to see it, and it's so much more common, which is giving us, like, taking the weight off everyone's shoulders.
And do you feel, I mean, you talk about it a lot, and you obviously kind of were in it. Why do you think it's so easy? Or maybe the question should be, why is it so hard not to fall into this, like, this is what it's supposed to look like?
Because that's what we were raised on. We watched, you know, rom-coms and, you know, princess stories. And it was just what you knew. This is what we knew growing up. There's very, like, Leave It to Beaver. I mean, I'm a little bit young for that, but,
no,
like,
it's true.
That's just what we saw and what we knew.
It's funny because you talk a lot about Seinfeld, and I kind of laughed. I was like, oh, God, I wonder if that were, like, what I, because I'm probably, like, a generation above you. So I'm like, and I love Seinfeld, but I was like, I wonder if that was what I was raised on, like, the formative years. I was like, that's fascinating, because what makes it so great is its, like, brutal honesty of kind of negativity.
Yeah, they just embrace that negative, weird view on everything.
Yeah.
I love it.
You talk about how your parents' divorce did kind of fuck you up, though, and it made you nervous to date because you feel like, well, what's the point? Like,
yeah, of course.
This fairy tale doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So, but now you're with someone.
Yeah, I did it.
And you feel you did. Congratulations.
Oh, my God. Took me 36 years figured out.
But everyone always says it, but I'm like, it's not even about, you know, people get married at 22 and people get married at 25 and they get married at 30 and it doesn't mean they figured it out.
That is actually,
and that's what people need
true.
To know. I say to them all the time, I go, just because people are married or just because people are doing something the way you think you're supposed to do it does not actually mean they have figured it out.
That is so true. And actually, I am so grateful that, like, I'm so grateful for all my relationships past, because they really do lead to the next. And whenever anyone asks me about breakups and how you get through it, it sounds so, like, easier said than done, but knowing that there is a brighter light at the end of the tunnel, too, it's like, okay, this didn't work, but now, I'm gaining these, like, lessons, and now I'm moving forward. So I think we're both so grateful that, one, we didn't get married before now, because there could have been people in my life that probably, like, we could have made it, you know, we could have forced it.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about marriage and this and that, but I'm so grateful that I never settled and it just, like, kept pushing along regardless of the fact that I was like, oh, here we go, get back on the horse. Like, no one wants to do that, but it's worth it.
Totally worth it.
Yeah.
And do you feel like when you look at, like, how many of your friends are still married from anyone gone through divorces yet?
I have one friend who's going through her second divorce.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's
a whole different story.
Yeah. That's a really, like, extreme version. But yeah, I think there's a few, and it's going to, I mean,
there's going to be more.
There's
going to
be more.
It's just life.
Yeah.
But do you feel like do you now believe in the forever, like you were afraid your parents ruined for you? Or what is your ideal of love now?
I think we all have a bunch of soulmates along the way. Like, I think the person I'm with, I'm going to be with for as long as humanly possible for both of us, you know, hopefully, you know, whatever. But I do actually think that there's more than one person out there for you. And I've seen my mom go through it, you know, and I don't know what forever means, but until it's time to move on.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That's what I always say. That's why I used to struggle with the concept of marriage, not for the same reason you did, because my parents have been married for fucking ever. For me, though, I always struggled because I was like, but what's forever? Like, who can guarantee forever? That's a scary guarantee, no matter how much you love someone.
Sure.
So I get it. I used to always be like, I just feel like you can be super in love and have the perfect person. But like you were just saying, who knows where the journey takes you or what you're supposed to learn or where you're supposed to go.
Yeah.
So it was the
or
same
health,
idea.
Like, you know, God
willing.
God
forbid. Yeah. But God forbid it ends for more dramatic reasons.
But my grandpa got remarried. So my grandma passed when I was 16, and my grandma and grandpa had been together for what seemed like forever. Maybe, I think I talked about it in the book, 45 years or something. He got remarried and has been with this woman. They're 101 and 102, and have had this, like, whole second journey of life. So he's had two great loves.
It's like, been like 40-something years also.
Yeah, how great is that?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it also shows you part of, I think, the mystery of relationships. People think you find this perfect partner, your person, and then it's great. And they don't realize, no, like, there's actually self-growth that's constant that you need to be doing for the relationships to work. No matter how perfectly in love you are, there's so much about actually, like, working on the relationship.
Yes.
Which I think shows when you see people like that who've had multiple amazing relationships, there's a factor in there. It's probably the people and how they're willing to actually negotiate the dance.
Yeah. It's a partnership. It's a business partnership.
It is.
You know, it really is.
And like, how much do you want to like give and take with your business partner?
Yeah.
You can like shut it down and then see how that goes, or
right.
you can be like open and like accepting
and work it.
And work it. Yeah. But I thought it was just really interesting how you gave hilarious dating advice about doing, I mean, the app dating advice is really funny, but you're right, because I see it all the time now too, everyone dating and they just so, we're not, I love what you said, which is just know everyone's expectations are different and what they want and what they're going into it is different.
Yeah. I think it took me a long time to figure that out. It's so easy to take things so personally, right? Whenever someone doesn't swipe on you or doesn't write you back, it's like your fault. What did I do wrong? Or if you're on a date and they don't call you for a second date, it's me. It's so easy to look inward and be so hard on ourselves when really, if you flip it around, one, are you even interested in that person?
Right. No, now it becomes I wanted them.
Yeah, you just want them because you can't have them
because
it's an ego thing. But also really putting into perspective that everyone's online dating for different reasons. Some people just do it for an ego boost and are on the couch
Absolutely.
Or on the toilet swiping just because they're bored even. And so you got to remember that it's not always a reflection of what they think about you. It's just they're in a whole nother place. They're doing it for a whole different reason than you are.
Absolutely. And I love that you said that about, I think part of so many issues that people have period in life is because of this self narcissism. And I say that lightly, meaning we all do it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like you're a narcissist, but there is a self narcissism that happens where we do, because look, it's our own lives. It's our own planets revolving. I mean, there's no way around that. So, but we forget that it's also that person's own life and their own planets. And so whatever they're going through is their own shit.
Yeah.
But everything becomes about how it's me and what did I do and, oh, my God, fuck them. And then it just spirals you to a whole other place that has nothing to do with you at
Absolutely.
All.
Absolutely. And if you can, like, recognize that that's a pattern that we all do, I think it helps in situations. Even, like, auditioning or interviews, or it's so easy to, like, turn everything inward and I'm doing it wrong and trying to do something right, trying to be perfect. It just doesn't. It doesn't.
No, you
got to
just figure out you.
Yeah.
I know. It's just a friend of mine was just doing online dating, and she was like, "I had the most amazing date with this guy, and we're gonna see each other, and then and I can't believe he rejected me." And it was all became this self-loathing. And I was like, "Don't forget, you had one date. It's not like you dated for 2 months and this ended. Like,
right.
Do not let this get you down. Like, you had one date. It was great. I know you were excited, but like, you got to move on from that. Like, it has nothing to do with you if it was just one date.
That's such a call.
I'm like, do
I
not.
See
you can't, I was like, you can't act like this is the breakup of like the year after one date. You got to go. That's, I mean, I've been there too. It's like you connected with someone and you're like super excited because the connection was so great. I was like, chalk it up to being maybe confused or maybe look at it as, clearly there was something different going on than I felt.
Yeah.
I go, but you can't let yourself spiral to this like depression after one like,
date. Which ultimately has nothing to do with the person she went on the date with.
Of course.
It's all her own stuff.
Insecurities.
Yeah. And also like you don't know what's going on with that other person. What if their like love of their life that had broken up with them.
Called them back.
Just called and said, I want to get. Like it, most of the time it has
nothing to
do
with you.
But that is easier said than done.
Way easier said than done.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you know, you talk about this whole time how you struggle. Like, you know, you talk about it as if you're like, I had no clue what I was doing. But it's interesting, as you went through all of your relationships, like kind of in the book, yours actually had a pretty interesting perspective during the breakups, I found. Like, I found you actually had a very mature point of view, which is why even though, as you said, like, oh, I finally figured it out. And then we kind of talked about, well, I don't know if you figured it out as much as you kind of just let yourself grow and let the right thing come when it was supposed to versus forcing stuff. I found that really interesting because you were, whether it be with Shane, which was a more public breakup, but that was actually such a beautiful ending. And your ability to let him go and love him so much in the process, I think was super mature and a way for you guys to like both continue growing and move on. And also like even the Florida thing, which was like your epilogue basically.
Yeah.
But that was really mature too, and I knew it. The minute like you were talking about how this guy is like looking amazing and playing with the kids and everything you want, and then all of a sudden you were like pulling away right away, I was like, oh, the future's scaring her. Like, she knows.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to. But I feel like that is super mature to be like, oh, crap, like I just got a vision into what having kids and being married like with this guy would be, and as much as like he's amazing, not for me.
Yeah, it was that gut instinct. I had that moment of like, this isn't.
But you paid attention to it.
But I paid attention. But I think that all happened from Shane on. I think before that, it was a little more volatile. That was in my 20s too. Because I hadn't processed everything. And I think with the Shane breakup, I actually remember having a conversation with him where I referenced my parents and how they're partners and how they were able to still continue this relationship, but in separate, you know, going separate
ways. You had that conversation before the breakup or during
the breakup? During, as you know, this year-long breakup situation. But I do think I use them as sort of an example of like, hey, we can still be partners in this because we were so afraid to like lose a sense of any
You guys had a deep friendship. At the core, you guys were really good friends.
We were good.
Which is probably why it lasted as long as it did.
Yeah, we didn't want to separate because it sounds gross, but we were like family at that point. It was that kind of bond. Yeah, you shouldn't sleep with your family, but
no, but you end up becoming family a lot of times with the person you're sleeping with. So
that is true. That is true.
So look at it that way.
Yeah, okay, I like that.
Less incestuous.
That's a lot better. Thank you.
Then you can still say family.
Yeah.
And you also have business together, which I mean, I know is no reason to ever stay with anyone, but it's a lot harder to pull apart.
Sure, there's a lot more elements to it. But I think like I actually learned the most from that relationship in terms of then how to proceed with like ending other relationships. So the next big relationship I had, the one that you referenced in the Florida thing, it ended so amicably.
Amicably.
Yeah.
That is a weird one. It doesn't roll off your tongue as easily as you think it would.
It's kind of counterintuitive to the definition.
You're right. It's not amicable on your tongue at all.
So I think, I don't know. I just feel like now I'm...
Do you think part of that is because he was gay? Like in a weird way, you could separate the personal.
Oh my God.
Of it all?
If he started dating a woman right after...
You would have been like, fuck you, and volatile breakup.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I would have reverted to my 20s. Yes.
But what a beautiful lesson, though, to be taught that you can do that and be happy for someone even as they move on.
Yes, because it all leads to the next.
It's funny. That started happening in my 30s, too. Like, I had a pretty gnarly breakup with a guy. We were great. There was cheating involved. But it was funny. Like, even with that, like, I remember just wanting him to be happy, and we stayed really close. And I remember it was different than any of the breakup because soon afterwards, like in my healing phase where you're just going out with your friends, I ran into him with the girl all of our friends because like we always hung out in big groups at a brunch. So there could not have been a worse scenario. I basically watched her being like put into my spot, like hanging out with all my same friends. And I remember he and I were so happy to see each other. And even though like it was hard as far as ego-wise seeing that, I remember like I was genuinely excited to see him because I missed him.
Yeah.
He was genuinely excited to see me. We had a great moment. And I remember leaving being like, this is such a different breakup. Like, yes, I still had to heal all this shit, but I just wanted him to be happy.
But also, were you so much more comfortable with yourself? You had figured out kind of...
For sure. I was always pretty comfortable. Like, my 20s were definitely more of kind of like how you describe your 30s a little bit.
Yeah.
And so... Yes, for sure. And there was something about, but that was definitely, I remember, a turning point of, because he was in my face, too, a lot. It was like an actor, so I always had to see it. But it was very weirdly like, I just want you to be happy. And like, we're still friends to this day. I mean, we're not like best friends because like we've all moved on with different lives. But
but
like, there's never been a negative feeling for either. I mean,
And there doesn't need to be.
And there doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
That's awesome. If anything, there's been more negative on the new partners into it. I think probably because it's hard to understand why someone's not like just putting their hand up towards an ex and being like, fuck you, get away.
Yes, but that's their own issue and that's deep rooted in something else.
But I remember paying attention to that feeling where I was like, the overriding emotion I had in that moment at that brunch wasn't, oh my God, fuck you, fuck them. It was, oh my God, I'm so excited to see you. I miss you. Like that was...
I'm so excited.
That was the paramount feeling.
Yes.
Like obviously those other feelings were also
of
like
course.
Mixed in, but that was the big one and that was the one I took away. And I remember leaving going, that's interesting. Like I was genuinely excited to see him. Even though like she, who by the way, I became really good friends with too. Like, because that's what started to change. Like so many of those girls that were like hooked into that are actually dear friends of mine now. If any of them are listening, they know exactly who they are. Yeah, because
don't you think that
like,
makes
there
sense
wasn't any
too?
Anxiety towards them anyway. I'm like, it wasn't about you. It wasn't about me. It's about him.
Yeah.
And like, we're all like really good friends too. So it just shows you like when you kind of can take yourself out of that orbit, how much easier it is.
It's taking your ego out of it.
It is. And then it just becomes easier. I mean, just the less stress, the less shit you're putting on your physical body, actually.
Yeah, because it does become physical.
It does. I mean, feel it. I think about the difference of how I used to feel, like when you'd be like crumbled in a ball getting over the relationship. There's still sadness.
Of course.
You still have to process it. And the difference of kind of that freedom of knowing, like you were talking about, all right, I just have to get through it. The light's going to come and this is going to be hard, but I will get through it.
Yeah.
Such a different physical manifestation.
Absolutely. Even when you were telling me the story,
you can feel it, right?
Yeah, levity. Like, it's like, oh.
It's levity with a sadness layer.
Yeah.
And then the other one is literally like an anchor that like can't move, that you're like stuck on the bottom of an ocean drowning.
Yeah. I know all those feelings.
Right? I mean, yeah. I mean, that's part of growing. It's part of growing. Hey guys, we've been talking a ton about this book, 30 Life Crisis, and I just want you to know it's also really funny on top of informative. So if you'd like a signed copy of 30 Life Crisis, we are doing a giveaway. So go to our Instagram at Den Meditation for all details, and then like the post, leave a comment, and tag a friend to enter. But guess what? If you want to be entered twice and have two chances to win, also write us a review and send it to dentalkspodcast@denmeditation.com. But so another thing you talk a lot about is kind of, again, in the norm, like so many of your friends were starting to have kids and you're like, I don't even think I want to have kids. Do you still feel that way? And by the way, I always am very happy for people who know that.
Do you have kids?
I do, but I always wanted kids.
Yeah.
And I've always been a strong believer and a big supporter of any friends of mine who even have an inkling of not wanting it, because I'm like, own it.
Yeah.
Do not get lost in the world of feeling like you have to do something.
Yes.
Because A, we have an overpopulation problem.
Absolutely.
B, it is not easy. So why would you go down that road unless it's something you actually want? And there's a beautiful life to also have without having kids.
Yeah. And I have 5 God babies.
You got kids.
Which is crazy. But I don't know yet. The answer, like, truly
is, you don't
is
know.
I don't know. And my boyfriend feels the exact same way.
That's
which
interesting.
Is
it's
awesome.
That is great.
It's not one of us, at least at this point in our life, no, it's not like one of us pressuring the other, which you hear about sometimes too. So I think we just like, we'll just move at our own pace. And
no, but that's great, because so that's what happens sometimes. It's like one does an ultimatum and then it's...
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But own it. Again, like, I'm so big on people just like, know what you want and like go by that. Like, don't, who gives a shit what people say you're supposed to do?
Yeah, especially with kids.
Oh, I mean, my God. And then you fuck up the kid because you really don't want to be there.
I know. And now I have friends who like have kids who are just like, don't do it. I mean, they love their kids.
Of course.
But I appreciate the honesty too.
Well, it is a hard thing raising kids. And if you really don't have that thing of wanting to raise a child, I'm always like, go explore in different ways. And there's so many other things you can be contributing to the world.
Absolutely.
And doing that are going to be like, and you are doing that. And it's like, I don't know. It's just really interesting. So good for you for holding on to be who you need, and you'll see what happens.
I think I'm trying to go like day by day. And
that's
I think our relationship too, we're like, should we talk about getting a house now? I was like, ugh, let's just go day at a time and see what happens and stop playing into those expectations.
Do you think you want to get married?
Yes. So but what's so funny is I'm like, I'm fine to not do the whole ceremony. Like,
I was going to ask you because you're very opinionated about the way. Which, by
I
the way,
am.
I've shared the exact. I was married before, different than who I'm with now, and I shared the same opinions as you. I did not have bridesmaids for exactly the same reasons you said. I'm like, I am not stressing. I go, I want people to have fun at my wedding. I don't want people to hate me by the time they get to the wedding.
Yes. And how many weddings have you been?
I didn't even do a wedding shower. I was like,
yes.
And frankly, I wasn't even going to do gifts. But then everyone just asks you and asks you, so we just did like a fun thing. But like, I was so like, what can I do? Because I'm with you. I'm like, it weirdly becomes everyone else's issue when you're getting married. It's like, just do what you want to do. Like,
yeah, totally. And now we're like past the age where I feel like we have more control over, like, we're just going to do it the way we want. We've gone
1,000%.
To all like the, you know, chicken or steak weddings. And so I would be fine not doing one.
He wants one.
He wants one.
That
I think
was
that's
my,
so
that was,
cute.
By the way, that was my scenario when I got married.
Really?
It was funny. Yeah, and even now, because like I think my husband would get married in a second. I'm the one who's like, But my ex was like, no, I really want the... He's like, I really want the ceremony. I remember being like, well, okay, but you know I like to throw a party then. So if we're going to do it, we're throwing a party.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was great.
He just wants the party.
And it was great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we're not there yet. But we're going to do things our own way. I don't want a diamond. The whole thing. Like, I just... I'm really embracing trying to just do things as I actually want them.
Well, that was literally just my question that I was about to ask you. When do you think, because I feel like so much of what your journey has been is getting in touch with you.
Yeah.
Like being okay with what it is you want and not worrying about what the standard is and not having anxiety about what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So when do you think that finally started settling for you? When do you feel like you started to feel that difference of being able to like confidently own your way?
I really think it's been maybe the last 3 years. I think I finally, once I got over the hump of like worrying so much about the 30s, right? Like coming into it, got past that big breakup, even the next breakup, I think it was just like very recently where like I got control of my anxiety, and I think that's a huge thing. And then I'm like, oh, I'm enough. Like, this is great. And I'm doing it my way. And I got all these places and I got all these opportunities and have done all these things because I've done it completely my way, unfiltered. I haven't climbed the ladder. I've just been doing it as me.
But you had been doing it as you even before you got.
Yeah, I guess
so. Anxiety,
I guess
it
was
right?
just
you
connecting
just,
the
you
dots.
You couldn't own it.
I just couldn't own it. And I think it just some of it just comes with age.
And it's beautiful. You said I'm enough. Like, so that yeah. was an issue for you.
I think so. Yeah. Because when I was with Shane, and I've talked about this, it's not like anything new, but like he's the king of YouTube. I mean, really, this guy is now he's like has 22 million subscribers. Like,
it's crazy.
It's insane. And he's been doing it forever. And I really lost myself and I don't regret it, but I was the president's wife. Like, I referred to myself as the president's wife. Like, I supported him and I was still doing my own thing, but I really invested in him because it was fun and I was so proud of him. And, you know, like, I don't regret any of that. But I think coming out of that, it was like, oh,
who am I?
It's, yeah, who am I? And also, like, it's my turn now. Like, I'm giving myself permission to now do the rest of my work for me and not for someone else.
Do you think how, let's talk about this a little bit of how it's interesting that you've always had such a job that has been, not always, but for a long time now, has always been kind of about perception and on the other side. And yet you were struggling so much through periods of it. How much of that transparency was there? And in general, and with what you have learned now about yourself, how much do you feel like, what do you think the responsibility of people who work in that space is? There was a few questions in there.
Reverse.
Okay, let's start. How do you feel like it's changed for you as far as what you put out there, or has it not?
In terms of like sharing?
Sharing, not, it doesn't have to be about sharing, but about what you feel like is actually representational of who you are.
Oh, I think I've always been oddly open. And I think, I mean, obviously, like on YouTube, it's a little bit of a heightened version of me.
Right.
And energy-wise, you have to do that too, right. You know, to really like engage the audience. But I do actually think I've been pretty genuine throughout. But as I have gotten older and become more self-aware, I think the openness and showing my true self has even increased because I've figured out who that is.
Right.
So I think it just kind of has evolved as I have evolved. But YouTube, which has been like, you know, kind of kickstarted everything for me, I'm so grateful for it, is a space where people go because it feels real. Like, people don't go on YouTube to watch these fully highly produced videos. They go on the ones that do the best or the ones that are the most real. So that's all I ever knew. That's all I've ever been doing for the most part on there. So,
and what do you feel like the responsibility of, I mean, now it's like, it's such a huge industry, YouTube or just Instagram or any of it. Do you feel like there's a responsibility or no?
I think it's probably according to who you ask. For me, I feel 1,000% responsible for the people. There's a lot of young women that watch me. And my other career and life path is I owned a children's theater.
I love, by the way. I was literally telling Nicole, I'm like, I gotta get my daughter into one of these things. She's so dramatic. I feel like if she channeled it.
You must.
And then I was reading and I'm like, oh my God, does she own one? You're like, and we close. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, we were in Studio City, kind of near where your
the
other.
Den.
Yeah, the den is. That's all to say that I.
Oh, I thought you were going to break out.
I've been a teacher for half of my life also to young kids, a lot of mostly women or young girls. And so I think it's just innate in me that I feel a social responsibility to show an unfiltered version. I think that's what the book is too.
The book is very unfiltered.
Yeah.
Do you struggle like looking at kind of the world now? I mean, it's a really tough world, especially like now as a mom.
Brutal.
I look at it and I'm just like, it's just, you know, I was saying this because I see these girls who are doing like highly inappropriate things for every picture now because everyone thinks they're a model. And I remember telling my mom, who's like, it's awful. I'm like, well, look, we all did it, like even in the 80s and 90s, but we were doing it in front of a mirror in our rooms. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we put on music and we would pose and see
That's
what the best
so
pose
true.
Is. I was like, I remember doing it too. Like, I perfected my pose and I perfected this, but it was me
yes.
by myself. and a mirror. Yes. I go, the problem now is their mirror is a camera and there's an audience and it's huge. And it's like, and there's ramifications to that. Yes. Like for us, it was kind of like, it's just you trying to figure out your identity and struggling with like, what do I want to present? And hopefully you ultimately learn it's not about presenting, it's about you. But we all go through, you have to like bobble that way.
Yeah.
But now there's audience and there's reaction and
validation.
And validation. Or not validation, which is also just as bad.
Yeah.
Both. Just the fact that there's reaction, period, is a little scary.
I mean, I don't envy you for raising a
daughter.
I'm
terrified. She's still too young for that. But I'm like, hopefully maybe it all crashes and burns by the time she gets
You know what? Yeah, it might.
It might.
But also I'm hoping that people that are having kids now and are now aware of what's happening are able to modify how they allow their kids to be
using
it. Yeah, because I think the generation that had kids right when this all happened didn't know. No concept of it. So it kind of got out of control. So I'm hoping, and I've seen it with my friends and their kids, that we kind of rein that in and change the way that it's working. And I think that's talk like of Instagram overseas is starting to change their policies where we won't be seeing likes.
Right.
So that takes a whole, if that's really going to happen.
Would love that.
It'll change
the whole landscape because it's funny. I just taught a class the other day about kind of confidence and also about just uniqueness and being unique. And my whole point was, you know, we all think in a weird way, it's cool to be unique now.
Yeah.
So like everyone's like, oh my God, I'm unique because like I've did my hair in a way no one's done their hair yet. Or I'm doing this. Or like on Instagram, it's like, look at my page. Look at this cool thing I'm doing. But like being unique for unique sake is not actually owning your unique self.
Correct.
And sometimes your unique self might actually follow the total boring norm because that's what you need or what you like. And that's what you should embrace because that's actually who you are. So it's like, how can you embrace your unique self versus trying really hard to be unique? And my point was, you think you're owning your uniqueness. You think you're owning who you are. But the minute you don't get the likes, you change direction. So that's not owning your uniqueness at all. That's creating a manifestation of something that's actually not you.
That's fascinating.
And it is because, so you're right, if you remove those likes, people are going to have to...
Game changer.
I wonder how many people are actually going to put themselves out there. It'll change, I think, the volume.
Yes.
Because I think people will be a little bit more nervous of like, I have no clue if they're liking me or not.
Yes.
And then I think the people who are actually willing to be themselves will actually just come out because you won't know what's working
or not. It'll be a little bit more authentic.
Well, yeah, because you have to be. It's like you just put out there because you want to, not because someone's
not because you're chasing a like...
I mean, I've had arguments with people about this before.
Yeah.
Like, of people who are like, well, I did this because I thought it was really special, but then I didn't get it, so I took it off. I'm like, but if you thought it was really special, just keep doing it. Like,
that makes me sad.
Me too, because it's like, well, then you're not owning your own. And also, some things take a while to catch on. And second of all, don't do it because they're going to catch on at all. Do it because it works for you.
Right. And that's, I mean, people ask me about YouTube, if they want to become YouTubers, how to begin.
What do you say?
Don't chase a trend. It's the same exact thing. Make content that you wholeheartedly enjoy.
And believe in.
And people will feel that. You can feel someone's authenticity. You can tell when someone's faking or trying. It's exactly what you're saying. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. And I used to, you know, I used to work in entertainment. And so I used to have to give like a lot of people just always have me talk to like upper and comers to be like, how can I even break in? And now it's been a while, so it's different. But I remember telling people, you guys are so lucky. You're from such a different generation. Like back in the day, you'd find a way to write a script, sneak it to someone to get it on the thing. Like how, because you'd have to have an agent. Like otherwise, how do you get it? I'm like, just own your voice. You have a million ways to get your voice out there now. Own what your voice is. If your voice is authentic and is going to grow on its own, you will get noticed.
Yeah.
And you will, as it has for you and for other people, it will grow in ways that are unimaginable. And now you have a way to get your voice out there, which before people didn't really have.
Yeah.
Like they could write and write all they want. They could be the most brilliant writer, but if they didn't somehow find a way into the right hands,
that's right.
It never was seen to public.
Yeah.
So it isn't, but it always goes back to, but you've got to have your own voice.
Yeah, because you can't keep up with everyone else's. Like, I struggle with this with auditions where, like, you'll get the breakdown and the character will be, you know, they think they have this very specific idea of what they want. And so I go in, I'm like, okay, I have to do it perfect. I'm so worried about, like, doing it the way I think they want me to do it, which is, it's so absurd. That's such an absurd thing to be chasing. It's chasing this perfection that doesn't actually even exist.
No.
And the people that get the roles are the ones that come in and do it their own way.
It's funny. I used to say this all the time because I used to be in the casting room all the time. And I have a lot of actor friends. They'd be like, during pilot season, we'd always be like, but what do I do? And I'm like, just go in there and do it. You have no clue. No one, because they'll be like, can you put in a good word for me? You know this person. I'm like, I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. No one's like, I want to work with that person because they're nice, or I don't want to work with that person for the asshole. You either walk in and you own that part and everyone's like, holy shit, that's it, or you don't. Like, it has nothing to do with like anything else. Yes, if you're super, super famous and they think maybe that'll help get viewers, that might be the only thing that trumps anything else.
Yeah.
But otherwise, when you're just auditioning for like things, it's always like someone just is the role.
Yeah.
They come and you're like,
because they're authentic and they're just doing it their way.
Yes. It always boils down to that. And the relationship, it's like, it sounds like when you figured out how to be you.
Yes.
That's when you could actually be open. I know you made that joke about Super Soul Sunday and I was like, but it's true. It's like,
yeah, you can't until you love they. I mean, it's all the cliches really do. They're a cliche for a reason.
They're a cliche for a reason because it's true. But like we talked about here is, but then how do you do it? Like, how do you love yourself? How do you get out of the spiral? How do you, you know, stay authentic, you know, versus like there's all these things like you should do this, you should do this. And how do you, and so what do you feel like for you has worked the best?
I think talking for me, being open about it, going to therapy, but also meditation, yoga. For me, exercise has changed my life significantly. It's kind of an outlet physically and
mentally.
What's
your exercise, yoga or?
No, I switch it up. Right now I'm doing spin class and then I also do weight training. I just love it. It makes me feel powerful and strong and awesome. And sometimes it's just me and a bunch of dudes and I feel, you know, I'm 5'1" and I'm just like kicking ass. And that's what I'm doing right now. You know, sometimes I go through different phases, but I'm consistent.
And what type of meditation do you do?
So I'm not as consistent with that, but I found that I love loving kindness. Mm-hmm. I like a guided meditation because I really do have a hard time. My mind does go.
Absolutely. Everyone's does.
So I think guided helps me. And I found that that one I just am drawn to.
We're going to get you into the den more often.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh yeah, for sure. We got to get you in. Before we get to your four U's, so you're also a big Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise.
I am.
Recapper and watcher.
Yes. Although I feel like it's become very toxic.
I can't. I'm with you. I've been watching it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's change and it's social media.
It's social media because now they bring in people with followings and people are doing it just to get the following.
Yes.
So there's like no authenticity.
Talk
to it
about
anymore.
It all comes back to that. Yeah. So I'm still like watching it because
I know. I watch it and fall asleep and then yell at it.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. And sometimes I just need to zone out, and that's like my other form of like
me too.
Zoning.
And
it's
Housewives.
Fine. Yeah, whatever it is. I watch cheesy reality
and Married
shows.
At First Sight. I'm just pitching that.
People love that
it's
one.
It's amazing. I keep pitching it because it's more authentic.
Okay.
That's going back to why I used to love those shows, which is like just seeing how people's brains operate.
Yes.
For good and for bad.
Yes.
And that is
character
it right
study.
Now. It's a character study. Yeah. And it's a beautiful study of how do you actually make a relationship work?
Huh.
It's not really just about like two people who have the greatest chemistry.
Of course not.
But people don't always know that. And when you see a show like this, you're actually watching people have to figure it out, negotiate. And it's really clear the people who know how to do work and the people who are getting in their own way and can't do it.
Wait, that sounds fun.
I love it. And it's not frilly. It's not fancy. It's not sexy. If anything, sometimes I'm like, oh God, their editing's horrible and the music's a little much.
Yeah.
But like, I love it.
Oh, that's fun.
Content-wise, I love it.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me know. Get back to
me. Yeah, because I don't know.
I struggle also with The Bachelor, same thing, because I'm always like, no one real. And also, they're going so young now for the looks. But I'm like, none of these people want to get fucking married.
JPJ is 24.
There was something so adorable about it.
I know.
There was like this cute baby zest for life that I was actually, it almost kind of reminded me of like, oh my God, why am I blanking? That movie with Tom Hanks.
Big?
No, but that's a good one. Oh my God, why am I blanking? The famous one. What's his name? The kid who was a little bit off and he was sweet, Tom Hanks. And then.
Oh, Forrest Gump.
Thank you.
Oh, that's funny.
Like, do you know what I mean? Not in
the
kind of slow way, but in the exuberance of sweetness and life and just always childlike.
Actually, once he grows, he needs to grow up a little bit, but he's going to be a phenomenal dude.
Yeah, because he's fun and he's like really just loves like
love
everything.
He
just
loves. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so sweet. But yeah, they're so young.
So young.
Holy
I'm like,
crap.
None of them are ready to get married.
No, and please don't.
And don't.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, don't.
It's I struggle with it too. I'm like, it's just lost.
But just recently, it feels like
it's like
that.
The last few years.
Yeah.
Also, it's formulaic as all hell. They're like, oh, it's episode 3. I got to tell her I'm falling for. Oh, it's episode 4. If I haven't said I'm falling in love with her, they're going to kick me off. So I got to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, but if you're
it's
not.
It's a game now.
The few that I actually stay engaged are the people who are like, you can tell they actually like the person, but they're like, I'm not ready to be there yet.
Yes,
I'm like, well, that's
yes.
actually real. Go to that person.
Yeah, and that's interesting. We don't need to get engaged at the end of all these things. Like, it's more interesting the people that are like, I want to continue this, but like.
I heard the Colton, you might have heard this if you're more into it, the Colton season, like, you know, at the end it went crazy and he jumped
yeah.
the fence and like ran away. I heard part of the reason he did that was he always wanted whoever he ended up with.
I just learned. This is so weird.
It's kind of amazing.
Yes. And
do you guys even care about this? Sorry.
Like, I know,
we never talk about this on here, and like, I should have a show all about Bachelor and Paradise and like Bachelor and Bachelorette. But it's, I heard that he basically was like, they were keeping her from him in order to keep the show more interesting, and he was getting pissed. And finally at the end, he basically was like, fuck you. And then that's when he jumped the fence and was like, I'm done. And the only
yeah.
way he came back, right? Am I doing this right? Like, the only way he came back, he was like hiding from them. And the only reason he came back is that's when he told them, you have to let me dump these other women so I can prove to her that she was always the one, because
oh.
she doesn't believe it because of the way you guys produced it.
I heard something very similar where it's
yeah,
like,
tell me what you
heard. He always liked Cassie. He knew from
always.
The very beginning,
yeah.
but he knew that if he let them know that, they would either try to stir up drama, or they would stir it up because he was ready to pick her from the very
right,
start.
Right, but then she left. Right, same thing. But then she left because she didn't know.
Right.
And that's when he was like, this show sucks. Like, this is what I want. Now I can't get it. And that's when he was like.
Respect.
By the way, it made me like him so much more.
Yes.
I was like, good for you. He was
yes.
basically like, you say this is for me to find love and you don't give a shit.
Yeah, and they don't.
And they don't.
No. They simply do not.
I think that's actually why I like Bachelor in Paradise better, because as annoying as it can be, they are actually just sitting there having conversations with each other.
Yeah, they get more time too.
And they're actually just spending time together, and there's like no TV and no nothing. So that's why more relationships come out of there.
Yeah, totally. And they have more to choose from.
Yeah, and so it might be bullshit. Some of them are bullshit just to stay on longer. But
yeah.
the ones that actually connect, and they might not last forever, they're like more legitimate because they're actually talking to each other all
yes,
day.
Yes, totally.
And they're not always going on dates. Sometimes, even though they're in a beautiful atmosphere,
yeah.
they are just sitting
there. Around in the pool. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, I could talk about this.
By the way, me too. And I love that this is like the Den Meditation podcast. <Let's
laughs> I'd be like, leave it to me
but
for
I'm,
that to happen.
No, I'm
here.
Always very open that I watch crap TV, and it
okay.
always surprises everyone. I'm like, but I also love television. I grew up watching television. Then I worked in television for years and loved it and had a very like good career that I enjoyed. So it's like, I don't hide it. I'm
yeah.
like, everyone needs to be who they are. And we
love
always
that.
Get to know things. So let's do your four yous. So what
oh.
for you, those are just four quick questions.
Okay.
What's your, that for takeaways for the audience, favorite self-care hack?
Oh, say no to plans if you need to take care of yourself.
Yeah, people don't do that.
It's hard to say no to plans, and you feel like you need to be doing things, especially on like a Friday or a Saturday. But if you like know in your heart that you just need a night to decompress and take off, say no to plans.
I like it. First thing you do when you wake up?
Oh, I check to see what position my dog's in, because every morning it's so hilarious. Like, she's usually head on the pillow. So yeah, it's the first thing I like think and check to see like where she is in space.
So cute.
Yeah.
Do you have like a teacher or like a teacher that's inspired you? So whether it be, or even like a therapist, or has there been someone that's been very inspirational for your growth?
My mom.
That's,
yeah.
That's beautiful.
Because she's constantly growing and learning and teaching. And she's just an amazing woman, really. She's just constantly evolving.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, all moms want that to be the answer.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Do you have like a sign that for you validates you're on the right path?
Oh, that's interesting. I ask for signs a lot. I don't know if there's like one specific one. But like butterflies.
Do butterflies come in your life a lot? When you
yeah,
feel like
or hummingbirds. It's a lot of times it's animals, like a spirit animal of some sort. And now I've been pulling cards too.
You have?
My boyfriend and I pull cards once a week. And it's awesome.
Together? Like, do you have a certain night that you do it?
No, it's just kind of when we gather around, we have like a spot where we have them and we both just pull it, especially when we need it, when one of us is like lost in thought about something. And then we leave them out for the week. And then when we're ready for new ones, we pull them.
What's the moment you knew with your boyfriend that this was different?
Seriously, like pretty right away on the first date. We sat down. At first, I was like, oh, I don't know. He dressed terribly.
I know. I love that you said that. You're like, oh.
He's still.
By the way, mine too. Oh, and it's like,
don't let you. That can, you can't.
But people, by the way, will let that stop a relationship, which I think is ridiculous.
It's like, ridiculous.
Let them dress like shit. Who cares?
I know. And that's something I'm also working on is like, I love him for him, so who am I to like edit what?
Yeah.
I loved him even though he was wearing like a terrible outfit. But we sat down at the bar and he was so right away so inquisitive and not like it wasn't scripted. He really like
was asking questions.
And then he would ask me to elaborate on the answer and then would dive in deeper. And then he was like so open with himself and it was so clear that he had done the work.
Yeah, and you know, cared about you.
Yeah. And that he was so like self-aware that he was comfortable like asking me, you know, I don't know. It was just like one right away, the conversation, I was like, oh, you're on a whole nother level. Like, this is great.
Well, I love it because like the opening, he writes the foreword and
no, that's Shane.
Oh, that was Shane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love, it made me laugh because the opening is basically how hot it was in your apartment.
Yeah.
And that you're standing there naked in front of the, I used to do that all the time.
Dude, air conditioning was expensive.
Well, same thing. Like in my first apartment was Hollywood and it'd be so hot. And
yeah,
like
that's where I was too.
Yeah. And we'd be in a big building and I was with a roommate, a female roommate, and she used to just be like, are you fucking kidding me? And used to actually drive her crazy because like she'd wake up and it'd be like 9 a.m. on a Saturday and I'd be standing there eating mint chocolate chip ice cream with the freezer open and the refrigerator open naked and just standing there. It would be like August and just miserably hot. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. It's like the only thing cooling.
That kind of sounds like heaven besides the heat.
I know. And she'd be like, but it's 9 a.m. and you're eating ice cream. She's like, I fucking hate you. And like, she'd walk away. We're still friends. But I did that more. So I was cracking up when I was reading that because I was like, oh, that's sweet. I didn't realize that was Shane.
Yeah. Shane wrote the foreword. And Jeff,
I don't think I paid
boyfriend.
Attention. I think because he was saying it like I was with you, I just assumed at the end.
Yeah, no. It was kind of that. It's a kind of a full circle thing with Shane to have written the foreword. It was like really special. But Jeff, my boyfriend, current boyfriend, told me that he wants to write a book just for me of all the women he's ever dated. He's like, since I read
about
it. He's
like, so you have to read about it. That is true. It is funny when you think about.
Oh, my God. And God bless his mom. I think his mom has read the book. And
oh, God.
If she still loves me after this, then.
You don't say anything that horrible.
No, but you know, like for the mother.
You don't want anyone to know that you fucked anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
You're like, only him.
Only him and... Yeah, and it's beautiful every time.
Every single time. Yes. We never fight, and he's the most magical human.
Yes, I've never done drugs. I don't drink.
I know. That would be the hard thing about probably writing, like, a memoir or, like...
Yeah, you can't really think about that till you're done, and then you're like, oh, crap, people are going to read this.
Who's the first person who read it?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, I had an editor who would read it, but...
Who's the first, like, personal person you gave it to?
I think my mom.
And what did she say?
She loved it. She's read it so many times.
Oh.
I know. And then she listened.
Like, your
she
mom should be everybody's mom. I mean, I have a great mom, too.
Yeah, she's just the best, yeah.
Oh, my God, I love that. Well, you are a pleasure.
And you.
And it's really fun talking to you. And
I really
appreciate you being so honest in this book. Because I do think there's a lot of people who, whether it's to the degree you have it or just, like, social anxiety in general, like, I feel like it's really good for people to know, A, they're not alone, and B, you can get through it, and there's ways to manage it, which I think is the most important thing. It doesn't have to take over your life. Like, it might always be part of you, but it's, like, learning how to own it and work with it rather than, like...
It also fuels me. That my therapist said that. My therapist said it to me, and I was like, it's so brilliant. It's like, this is sometimes just part of my process as an artist. And like, if you look at a lot of comedians and actors,
You loved Seinfeld.
We're all fueled by anxiety. So it's just knowing and accepting that's who I am, getting control of it so it doesn't take over control, but also be grateful for it because...
That's who you are.
That's who I am.
And that's the one life you were given.
Yep.
Well, thank you. Stay tuned because she's going to do her personal practice and you're awesome.
Thank you.
So now Lisa is going to do her personal practice, which is a Dalai Lama quote.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that you guys told me to come up with something to bring in, and I wanted to bring a love and kindness meditation, and I was trying to look for one, and then as I'm walking out of my bedroom door, I realized I have this sign hanging next to my bedroom door, and it's been there for years, and I forget to read it and forget to practice it sometimes. And I was like, oh, of course, that's what I should be reading to myself and to everyone. So this is from the Dalai Lama, A Precious Human Life. Every day, think as you wake up, Today, I am fortunate to have woken up. I am alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I am going to have kind thoughts towards others. I am not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can. A precious human life.
Dentalk's podcast would not exist without these incredible people, Nicole Rappi, Reem Edon, Hayden Fungheiser, Kim Bielek, and music by Alex Fetter. Thanks for joining us. If you haven't subscribed, please do. And also, wherever you listen, please go and leave us a review. It's so greatly appreciated. It really does help us out. If you want to keep talking about all this stuff, please join our community on our secret Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search Dentalk's podcast, and join us there.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.